Welcome to the Blockchain Practitioners Podcast, where we interview founders, leaders, professors, and experts in the blockchain industry about the projects they're working on. On this podcast, we try to learn something new about an industry which will, in a few years, affect the lives of us all. My name is Steven, and I'm your host for this episode. He has an MBA in entrepreneurship at the University of California Rady School of Management, was the founder of Era Augmented Reality for the Blind, which was once recognized as Time Magazine's best invention, and as one of Fast Company's world-changing ideas. He is the current founder and CEO of Personal AI, an AI startup that is building technology to create a digital version of your mind. His motto, solve the problem, not the human, speaks to creating things that solve meaningful problems. I'm of course talking about my next guest, Suman Kanuganti. So welcome to the podcast, Suman Kanuganti. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Steven. I'm Suman. I'm Suman Kanuganti, the founder and CEO of Personal AI. By background, I'm an engineer, but my passion is mostly about taking convergence of technologies to solve some really hard problems, and the problems very much focused on things that are close to human being. In this company, I'm more focused on this idea of increasing cognitive capacities of people and the access between people. In my previous company, it was about increasing access to visual information for people who are blind and low vision. So generally that's kind of my background, and mostly passionate about creating products and experiences for people.
Yeah, it was interesting to look you up, because there's not a lot of people who are working in the industry of helping people with problems like disabilities or stuff like that, especially because it's a hard sell. So that's really interesting. You said you're now working on personal.ai, that's right?
Right.
Can you just kind of explain to us what personal.ai is?
Yeah, most certainly. Personal AI is a unique AI of a particular individual. The premise for this company, Personal AI, is that we create and consume a lot of experiences every day. But our creations are, at the mercy of what we remember, and 80% of what we create and consume are entirely lost. And beyond that, because of memories are lost, our creative potential is kind of unknown. So our goal is to create a personal AI as unique as you that essentially replicates your thoughts in your own style and in your own voice. And it is technically your own personal brand as well. By virtue of doing so, there is like twofold, which is this idea of unlocking, your potential, which is creating on sum total of all your experiences, because we tend to often forget, and there is a lot of information to consume and create every day, especially these days. But more importantly, this idea of access to people around you, because traditionally, as of right now, our ways of communicating with each other is at the mercy of, one-on-one time that we have to spend with each other. And obviously, not every thought leader can reach, all their communities, and not every consumer can interact and get deep into somebody that they cannot reach because of, status reasons or access reasons. And we want to bridge that gap. We want to bridge that gap, and we believe by virtue of creating these models that are as unique as you, we are going to unlock this self-potential, which also creates more value and reduces the access gap for their own communities, and establishes that deeper connection between people.
So that sounds like a hell of a gap to close. You're in the early stages now, so I would like to ask, what is the capability of personal AI right now, and then what is the dream? What does the finished version look like?
Yeah, personal AI today, we are focusing on thought leaders. So these are the people who already has like existing thoughts and content that they have written, and they usually have existing communities. So think about authors, storytellers, novel writers, bloggers, tweeters, you know, speakers. So those are the people that we are focusing on right now. So you can technically hop onto the platform, and if you are one of these creators, you can upload your work into the platform and convert, you know, your passive content into interactive content. So as a consumer myself, rather than passively listening to a podcast or spending all that time to read the book, you know, being able to remember most of the information that I'm consuming from blogs, now I have a richer interactive communication medium that is more relevant for me to almost interact and fetch the information that I would want. So those are the capabilities that exist today for personal AI. And in the future, the intent is to incorporate these personal AIs into your lives so that way it passively captures pretty much all your memories on a day-to-day basis and experiences. So it doesn't have to be a, you know, manual overhead for communities to kind of understand what is going on in your thought process. We want to automate people, content creation process, and consumers interacting with that content that is contextually relevant to them much more smoothly. So we focus on, you know, communicating with each other. We focus on more thought leadership. We focus on more consumption, less about the distribution and, you know, the problems of our capacity, being able to recall and create on top of it.
Now, personal AI is going to be an AI that has a lot of access to private information. And of course, today, in today's day and age, that's a hot topic. So how do you view the relationship between the AI and your private information?
Look, I think memories are private. Memories are personal. And I think we got to respect it. And I think rather than fighting the privacy, we took a stance of embracing it big time. So 2 years ago, when we started the company, the first thing that we set out to do is, yes, of course, like how do we create these models and how do we, you know, de-risk the idea of technology of creating the micro models. But more importantly, we also built systems to ensure the privacy of the data actually belongs to the user itself. So for me, from my perspective, I think this idea of privacy and the data ownership goes hand in hand. Which is you cannot guarantee somebody's information is private as long as you cannot guarantee, you know, the ownership of their own data. So that's one of the hooks for us into using the blockchain technologies, right? And every memory stack, which is nothing but a collection of your memories or a digital vault that we create for individual people to train on, is, you know, basically is behind Oasis Labs blockchain, which is a technology for ensuring the privacy and identity and ownership of your data. So that's the stance that we took. Now, from an interaction standpoint, which is a very interesting technological question that you ask, which is, hey, look, Saman, you know, I like my personal AI, I would want to use it for self reasons, but I don't want other people to, you know, interact without me controlling what information is given out. That's an absolutely valid thing. So the way we address that one is, again, putting the control back into the hands of the people. And we created systems and tools where it's not about sharing your entire memory stacks or your entire AI. You can pick and choose your sub-stacks or your sub-AIs and share them publicly. I'll give you an example. Let's say a content creator, they have these experiences, the thought process that they use their AI for to capture every day because it is an inspiration, right? It's almost like, you know, sum total of all your memories. But however, the end product that they want the consumers or communities to interact with is, let's say, a book, a written authored content. So you can choose to create a, you know, Substack of your book, which you are willing to put it out there and people to buy your books and consume it. It is the same method. You would basically convert that into an interactive AI. And instead of passively consuming that content, and it can actually actively interact with it. So we essentially are trying to replicate the same methods that people are used to today and give the control to them. So they can pick and choose how they would want to use their own AI for personal reasons or for community reasons. Does it make sense?
Yeah. And it's very interesting that you took the fundamental choice to not sell people's data and instead give ownership of it to the user itself. I think that speaks volumes.
Let's think about it. Right? I think over the past 4 to 5 years, the idea of the privacy and the awareness around the data ownership is clear. It's very clear on, you know, what does it mean to the consumers, and consumers care about it. You know, maybe it was a little bit muddled like 10 years ago, 15 years ago. It's like, oh, you know, I'm getting the utility, so I'm okay with giving the data. But now people has more understanding and more choices that they would want to make, and it's their right. So GDPR happened, you know, blockchain came along, and, you know, a lot of trust and the bias issues came along, misinformation came along. So these are all the side effects of technology that we did not address, you know, in the so-called Web 2, which I don't think is wrong, because I think we collectively are learning together, and we were focused on creating the utility, consumer utility, and now we had to think about how do we grow the consumer utility with privacy in mind, with data ownership in mind. And I guess that's where like the whole, you know, Web3 angle also comes into this company. It's less about a Web3 technology for us. It's more about we had a problem, we have principles, and we have choices that we have made. And there are some Web3 technologies that works perfectly for us, such as AI and model creations. And there are Web3 technologies that work perfectly for us, such as data ownership, privacy, and monetizing your AI. So why not, right? It's simply a technology choice to solve a problem. It goes back to my original passion and philosophy of, you know, converging the technologies for the right problem and then figure out what is good for the customers and communities.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, until blockchain came along, it was very hard to really give ownership to private information, and I think blockchain solves that beautifully. I'm assuming you are using zero knowledge technology as a blockchain. How else is blockchain used? Because that's not all, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there are three aspects to the blockchain for this company. One is, you know, we talk about data ownership quite a bit in Web3 in the blockchain space. And there needs to be AI to extract the utility of the data, right? So for us, it's more about, you know, why we need Web3 versus why like Web3 needs AI in a way. So the three things the blockchain is involved is one, fundamentally securing the data itself, which we were talking about. For every user, we create a decentralization identity that is backed by OSS Labs blockchain. And we are also a product first company. So the user experience on how people create these identities on the chain has to be super seamless and has to be no brainer. And that's what OSS allows us to do so. That's step number one, which is securing your data and having a decentralized identity of your own. Two is the ownership of data. We can do all the marketing stunts that we want that you would own the data, but unless and until we take that in the actions and prove it, it's useless. So the idea of ownership of the data and the audit trail associated with where the memory stacks are used by what models, either be humans or computers or code, is all audited, and it's behind OSS Labs blockchain again. So technically, you can choose to walk away with all your data, you know, if you don't like your model, for example, right? It is not stuck in anybody's platform. It is your data because you own it and you walk away with it. So I think that's a guaranteedness of your data ownership. That's number two. And the third thing is the monetization. So creator economy, I think we all know in various different forms and fashions. Let's stick to the content creator as a use case and an example. You have your content creator, they spend years, you know, writing the content and doing the thought leadership and gaining that knowledge. And now it is surfacing in the form of like books, blogs, you know, tweets, you name it. And the business model that exists could be like a flat subscription models, such as I would subscribe to, you know, Ben Thompson's newsletter and I would pay X amount of money. So technically these thought leaders and creators are in a business by itself, right? Like every individual person is a business by itself. So the creator economy existed in the traditional Web2 methods, which works, you know, great for some platforms. And even the novel methods of, hey, you subscribe to just me, also worked, you know, good, like for platforms such as Substack, and, you know, Spotify is doing that as well. Now we want to provide the same set of tools for Web2 creators, but give them a mechanism to do that in the Web3 as well. What do I mean by that? Today, creators set a flat price for their communities to access their content. And Web3 allows us to use the tools where your price is set based on the demand from the consumers, from the communities. So why wouldn't creators want that, right? They would. But at the same time, as it stands today, it is daunting to understand how the tokens are done and how creators leverage these systems and these tools in the system. I believe there is a recent metric from the State of Crypto from Chris Dixon, like around 20,000 creators within the Web3, and there are millions and millions of them in Web2. And why is the shift not happening? Because one, the utility has to be understood properly. The user experience has to be clear. And then it has to be not daunting for people to come in. So for us, it's a utility-first company. We want to provide the utility to the creators, to the consumers. We want to welcome them with the Web2 methods of doing things, but they also as an entry point into Web3 of gaining, you know, more control by creating their own token. So the third step is creator economy and doing it in the Web3 way.
Perfect. Yeah. Super interesting. Now, the you're talking about tokens. So can you elaborate the system that you have in mind now that you will be using?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's no different than, you know, thinking about NFT, right? So you own a piece of art and it has a set value that is associated with it. In our case, it's not a unique single digital asset. It's a collection of data, it's content. And the content is not in its raw form. The content is in the form of interaction with their own AI. So we're essentially creating these unique tokens for individuals with the data is gated, or access is gated based on access to the token. So it's as simple as a ERC-721 token that essentially carries the value of your AI, and as your stack increases, the value of your token increases, and people can participate in, you know, buying the token and gaining access to your AI. Right now, you are already like shifting the dynamics from, oh, I am a passive, you know, reader of your newsletter, to active participation into the economy that is created by a creator. I mean, why wouldn't people do that? At the end of the day, you are increasing the utility, you are increasing the connection, you are increasing the participation, and, you know, that greater sense of belonging and connection goes back into the fundamental idea of, hey, we had to start with creating or solving for the problems and then build on top of it. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, I think it's really, really interesting. Just to make sure that everybody understands, you're when you're talking about stacks, because I tried... Of course, I went online and I tried personal AI for a bit. So a stack is basically a data set, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
So the way we define stack is a collection of memory blocks that is time-bound. And now you may ask, what is the memory block, Suman? Well, memory block is nothing but a digital representation of a memory. So a memory could be a piece of content, context, people, time, location, emotion, you name it, right? So what we have created is a system that takes all this unstructured data that is happening in your life, knowingly or unknowingly sometimes, and then create your set of this like digital memory representations of it. And over a period of time, you have a collection of these memories, right? And so far, we are used to putting, like, let's say, visual data into Google Photos, and Twitter data and tweets, and blogs in Medium and Substack, you know, voices in Zoom recordings, right? It's not coherent of your life. And it happened because, you know, we were trying to optimize for, like, efficiencies. Now this is about optimizing for your cognition, for yourself and for your communities to access like individual. So we cannot like, just build on one of these things. We had to think about creating a cohesive digital like memory wall that is a representation of an individual. And that's what we do. And that's almost like the first step of this company, creating this memory stack. And beauty is like, this is your data. It's your digital asset. It grows for you, right? And nobody can touch it. And think about it, like 100 years from now, how people understand the humanity is totally different. I mean, pushing it too far, but I think about this as like foundations and fundamentals of, highlighting this idea of individuality and the focus of the individuality. We talk a lot about like Web3, data ownership, and how it associates the economics. I think we got to push a little bit further. There is good tools that is available to us right now, and it's a good time to be alive. And if you are unable to like pull all those pieces together in the goodness of something totally novel, totally new, and how you could like understand the history of humanity, I think that gives me goosebumps just thinking about the potential.
Yeah, I agree. And it's such a good explanation of why it's so important that this is happening. Like you said, everything is divided, blogs with blogs, and and Twitter has its own, and then Facebook has its own posts, and everything is divided. You have the pictures on Instagram. And I particularly loved how easy it was to start building that memory stack because, for example, I just connected to my Twitter and it just took all my tweets as input. And like you said, it's a completely different way of looking at interacting with the internet and with everyone around you. And yeah, that's one of the reasons I was so interested in talking to you. All right.
I mean, it is true, right? It's totally true. I think, think about it. So here's the fun part, right? Like there are tools today that basically puts all your social media links into one place. And maybe there are like tools that basically gathers all the data and puts it in one place. But the thing that we are missing is, you're almost like piecemealing your mind. And then some part of it is in one platform. Some other part of it is in another platform. Other part of it is like within ourselves. Some other part is with our friends, right? So there is one thing about this. Yes, there is data aggregation that is happening. But the other thing is, this is your mind. Like this is your life, right? What is like a one thing that you have today that says like this is my life in the digital form? Nothing other than yourself. So we are basically simply offering, hey, look, this is your personal AI. This is your asset. It's about your product. This is not personal.ai's like company product. This what goes into personal AI, it defines what that model is gonna do. And I think that's a beautiful thing for generally for anybody. We should all have our own AIs in our pockets that we can rely on, that's like trustworthy, that is ours, that is in favor of us, and doesn't have any external agendas. You can still make money off of it. You can still, use it for your benefit or your, community benefit, but you get to control. You get to control everything.
Yeah. So we've talked about personal AI. Where can people find more information about this amazing project?
It's as simple as personal.ai. The website is personal.ai. I'm happy that I landed there, and I'm thankful to the person who sold it to me. It's a story for another time, but it's personal.ai. And myself, I'm on Twitter, it's Suman Kaniganti. And the Twitter handle for personal.ai is @personal.ai with an underscore at the end, because Twitter is still giving us a hard time giving the handle that we want. it's on the web, and we'll be soon launching a network which is essentially the first of its kind. It will be a new collaborative network between the creators and between the communities, but the interaction is via AIs, and That is our secret launch that is coming up on June 22nd. So we are excited about launching this new way for people to interact between each other. And sometimes it may be with people that we never had access to because of whatever differences in the people we are and the status that we possess and the access that we have individually.
Perfect. You heard it here first, folks. The secret launch. Perfect. Now, something completely different. I was asked like one last question. Do you have any advice for young entrepreneurs out there, especially then in the blockchain space and Web3 and all of that?
Oh, wow. Oh, you got me on that front. For me, I think if you are coming new into Web3 space and the blockchain space, there is a tendency and there is a good saying of, hey, you know, I want to go down the rabbit hole and kind of understand everything that it gets. I think that is perfect. However, I think sometimes you got to get out of the rabbit hole and kind of understand, okay, hang on. Now I have all these tools. What are the problems that I'm most passionate about and how do I apply these problems? How do I apply these technologies to the problems, right? We can create tools for like quick things and, you know, quick hype. But just think about it. You know, at the end of the day, 10 years from now, we'll be looking back and it's like, huh, what are the problems that I solve and what do I feel good about? So I think for young entrepreneurs, it's okay to fall in love with the technology, but more importantly, it's important to fall in love with the problem that you're solving. And then use your love towards technology to solve the problem. So I think that's probably what I could say. And I'm not wise enough to give advice to people, but I think that's probably what I would say.
No, it's a super interesting and a super good advice. Fall in love with the problem. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So, man, yeah. Thank you so much for this interview. I wish you all the best with your projects. You already told people where they can reach you. So is there anything you would like to add?
Well, we have a big launch coming up that I was mentioning. And I think that's almost like a new collaborative network for creators and communities to interact with each other and establish deeper connection. But beyond that, we are a startup. We are also doing our next round of financing. So that way we can serve more creators and more communities and grow the company. So in the network, if there are creators, please, you know, start building your personal AI, whether you have your own content, your existing content for yourself, you know, go ahead and join the community. If the listeners, there are investors who are interested in what we had to say, you know, please reach out. And we would love to have you because we'll take any help that we can get. It's early stages of the company.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Cool. And hope to talk to you again in the future. Thank you for listening to the Blockchain Practitioners Podcast, and we hope you learned something useful and new about blockchain and digital currency today. If you are involved in an interesting blockchain project and would like to talk about it in a similar fashion to this episode you just listened to, feel free to reach out to us. Also, please like, rate, and review this podcast, and share our content with everyone you think would like it. If you'd like some more information on this project, you can always visit us on LinkedIn or our website at blockchainpractitioners.com. Thanks again for listening and see you at the next episode.